the day's biggest stories, the people behind the headlines, the conversations you won't hear anywhere else. I'm Christy Strasser. You're listening to Odyssey's On Deadline. Remember when federal troops started going into local communities, and then it morphed into protests, and the ICE killings happened, and we seemed to move past it? It's back. Here's WBBM in Chicago with Donald Trump's threat to the Democratic holdout Windy City. Specifically, Trump's social media post said, "Chicago will die if elected officials don't ask for his help to stop the violence."
The president's social media account posted at 3:45 a.m. that violence in Chicago has, in his words, never been worse. It then ran down a tally of casualties from last weekend's shootings, including Saturday night's fatal mass shooting in Washington Park, and went on to predict that Chicago would, in his words, die without federal law enforcement intervention.
"I find him to be a sorry individual."
During an update on the city's response to the Washington Park shooting, the mayor told reporters it's hard to take the president seriously, especially when the latest numbers suggest violent crime is continuing its downward trend in Chicago.
"If he was serious about driving violence down, not just in Chicago, but across the country, he would not be engaged in endless illegal wars."
The mayor called out cuts in ATF and violence prevention funding and said the president had an open invitation to invest in the people of Chicago.
That's a snapshot of the world of politics. But how about business and tech? Tim Cook retired this week after a wild 15-year ride as CEO of Apple. Here's KCBS in the Bay Area.
Ian Schur, AI and tech analyst for Time Worthy Research. Ian, always good to talk with you. What kind of long-term impact has Tim Cook had at Apple?
I mean, it's almost indescribable, right? He was one of the first real CEOs after Steve Jobs when it came to running the company. And in particular, he took over in 2011 when Steve Jobs, the co-founder, stepped down. He was ill. He eventually passed away. And Tim Cook took this company from being, you know, it had the iPhone, it had the Mac, it had all these products that were doing well, but he really turned it into this $5 trillion company that it is today. And there have been other CEOs in Apple's past, but none really match up against Tim Cook as a successor to Steve Jobs.
Yeah, when you talk about following Steve Jobs, I mean, I'll use a sports analogy. Some poor guy had to take Michael Jordan's spot on the roster when he retired. I mean, those were pretty big shoes to fill.
Yes, and it's not like they're going to retire the number either, right? Like, they still need a CEO at Apple. And I think that's part of what's been fascinating is that Tim Cook is a different person, right? He's had different approaches to how he wants to run the company. Almost immediately when he took over, he made it so that there were more, for example, donations to social causes, something that Steve Jobs had been kind of less talkative about and less supportive of. And he also really was able to push the company in terms of its supply chain, right? One of the things that really changed under Tim Cook was that they were suddenly selling far more iPhones than they were before. And part of that is because the iPhone really took off. But also, Apple's ability to meet that demand was something that really set Tim Cook apart from a lot of other CEOs that might have tried.
So just like somebody had to follow Steve Jobs, now somebody has to follow Tim Cook. What can you tell us about that somebody? And do you expect any major changes from the way Apple is led?
Yeah, so his name is John Ternus, and he's been at Apple for a long time. He's 51 years old. And I think what's interesting is that unlike Tim Cook, who was really a kind of operator and very good at supply chain management, that was really where his strength was. It's why Steve Jobs hired him into Apple. But also, Ternus, on the other hand, is more of a design person, right? He has more of the hands-on manufacturing kind of understanding of engineering. And so it's possible that we might see more of a return from the top, of the CEO actually being a lot more involved in the process. A lot of the reporting we've heard over the years is that while Tim Cook, of course, is supportive of his teams and may have positions and feelings about certain products, it wasn't like Steve Jobs, who would, you know, to the very littlest detail, and even like how hard a button clicked or, you know, how many pixels over a button was on the screen. You know, that wasn't something Tim Cook did. And so it's possible that Ternus is going to kind of bring that kind of thought to the leadership position, which could, you know, change a little bit about the way the company operates broadly.
All right.
Tim Cook oversaw seismic changes to how technology affects our everyday lives. But as AI continues to grow and reach deeper and deeper into our existence, what will jobs look like in the next decade? Here's Tommy Tucker in New Orleans.
Jason Shields, the COO of Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. Today we're going to talk about, this is interesting to me, the 10-year job outlook, is it?
Yeah. So I called this one creatively, the government just predicted your job's future, right? Yeah. And so the Bureau of Labor Statistics is the federal government's economic scorekeeper, basically. It produces all kinds of numbers that you'll hear in headlines over the, you know, the course of a year, right? With the unemployment numbers, inflation data, wage information. And then they do another report that doesn't really get a lot of attention, which is their 10-year employment forecast, right? Mm-hmm. And so what they do for this is they basically look at population, industry demand, technology, healthcare, tons of other things, long-term economic trends. And then they produce an estimate that says, hey, these are the industries and occupations that are likely to grow or shrink in the next 10 years. So I thought this was a pretty good one, because if you have a child that's getting ready to start college this fall, that child will actually graduate around 2030, which is right in the middle of this forecast. And so these are numbers that you should really pay attention to, right? I do put the caveat on there. It's a national map, not a crystal ball. So it's not going to tell you exactly this job is going to be here. It focuses more on the direction and the relative size than the exact head counts, right?
Mm-hmm.
So here's a highlight of some of the numbers, right? The BLS projects that the economy is going to add about 5.9 million jobs by 2035. Now that sounds like a pretty good number, right? That's really good. But when you pull it back and put it in context, it only represents about a 3.5% employment growth over that 10-year period. Hmm. That is about one-third the employment growth rate recorded in the prior decade. So I'm going to step back for a second for that one, Tommy. Basically, they're saying that the number of employees is going to only grow by about a third as much as it did in the past decade. And I don't think this is a surprise to any of us, but having it actually put out there and represented to us shows us, right, that there are going to be, while the job market's going to continue to be healthy, it's not going to be as strong and add as many jobs as it's had in the past based on this projection, right? Mm-hmm. So you really want to get down to those numbers, right? Because some parts of the economy are adding hundreds of thousands of workers in this projection. Others are shrinking. And then, you know, as we know, technology is going to change how some of those things work. So I always like to peel back some of the headlines that people may see in articles and just put a little color to them. So if you were to just look at the high level numbers, it says solar panel installers are projected to grow by 37%. Now that sounds huge, right? That's one of the fastest growing occupations in America. Mm-hmm. But you peel back that 37%, Tommy, it's only about 11,000 jobs over 10 years. So this is a great example of don't get caught up in the headline, right? Because Everyone's like, well, I'm going to go be a solar panel installer. The demand is there. They do expect big growth, but it's relative, right? Now, you peel back another one, right? Home health care and personal care aides, that's projected to grow about 18%, much less than that solar panels, but about 850,000 jobs, right? So this is, and I would encourage everyone, you can go to BLS.gov, which is Bureau of Labor Statistics, and you can actually pull all of this back, because they do a really good job of letting you kind of click through all of this. You can see average pay in some of those groups. You can see, you know, the total number of jobs. So it's a fun thing, especially if you're you know, you're entering college or you're in that part in your career where you're like, what's this going to look like? You know, another one that I thought was interesting is sometimes a shrinking occupation can still be hiring, right? We like to talk in broad strokes when it comes to, oh, AI is going to replace entire segments. And that's really not the truth, right? One that I thought was a little interesting was cashier employment, right? This is just exactly as it sounds, like cashier positions is going to decline about 6%. Now, that roughly works out to about 200,000 fewer jobs over the course of a decade.
This was cashier, you said?
Yeah, cashiers. Okay. So the things that, you know, the checking people out, yeah, those types of positions, right? But the BLS also said in their report that more than 500,000 cashier openings will open up in an average year. So again, if you look at it and you're like, well, this is a shrinking industry, the reality is there's 500,000 of those openings in an average year. And so they'll still continue to be churn and availability in those positions, right? Obviously, people will retire, leave the workforce, change occupations. So that's another one where I would encourage people, if they do go look at this info, don't just read the headline number. You want to dig into a little bit, mm-hmm, right? And then, you know, for folks looking either for career changes or other things, something that has the most jobs may not necessarily be your best career deal, right? An example of that is the home and healthcare thing. So home health and personal care aides, right? So that's just the folks who would actually come to homes and assist with those types of things. It's a huge growing occupation. It's big. But then you look at the median pay of it, which is about $36,000, mm-hmm, and then you realize, yes, there's going to be a lot of demand in it, but if they're still projecting that to be a rather low income job, it may not be, especially if you're going into college, one of those things that you may not want to focus on. Now, other healthcare careers pay substantially more, but they also require advanced degrees, licensing, tuition, clinical training. This is more that entry level position. So I always tell everyone also to look at demand, not just the whole deal, right? Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that kind of came out that the BLS specifically pointed out is, like, what do they think is going to actually impact this over the next 10 years? And what they said was aging is creating the clearest large-scale demand by job count. What that means is we have an aging population. And so, as expected, private healthcare and social assistance are projected to add more than 2.2 million jobs. Nearly 4 out of every 10 new jobs projected over the next decade is in those industries. And I don't think that's a secret, right? We're all living longer and we're all aging, right? And so that's kind of what's driving that. And it does talk a little bit about AI, but the Bureau of Labor Statistics is really careful to say what AI really means in all of this, right? It created some relative AI exposure categories based on whether AI is going to be capable of assisting work or completing someone's tasks. And exposure to that doesn't mean you'll lose your job. It's more of a, your position may change. So technology positions have huge growth. Data scientists are projected to grow about 35%. And this is the one that was a little scary and I think everyone should take note of. Office and administrative support occupations are projected to lose about 752,000 jobs over the next 10 years. And look, it's not a bad thing, Tommy, right? This is projections and this is kind of one of those things that you kind of look at and just say, how does this impact me? And what should I do, right? So, you know, I get the question a lot, when should someone consider a pivot in their career? And based on these numbers, no person should ever just say, hey, I'm changing because my industry is going to lose things. I kind of use a general 3 rule of thumb, right? If the Bureau of Labor Statistics sees a long-term decline in an occupation, that's your first trigger. Second, just look inside your current employer. If they're not filling those positions anymore, or if advancement disappears, things like that, that's kind of your second little trigger. But then the third is, if you're starting to see in the local market, there are fewer employers posting for that type of job or the advertised pay is weakening, then that's usually your signal. And generally, if I see 2 of those 3, that's one of those things where you should start while you're still gainfully employed, just kind of hedging your bet and looking for other options. I'm not telling everyone to go shop for jobs, Tommy. That's not what I'm getting at, mm-hmm, here. But you should assess your current situation and you should look at your actual boots on the ground information you see with where you're working and what you're seeing in job postings. And that'll kind of give you some real-time analytics into what exactly is kind of happening with your type of industry. So last thing I wanted to touch on, if I have
sure,
enough time, Tommy, is they did a 2-year look back, 2023 to 2025, right? They called it the displacement look back. And so it identified about 7.4 million displaced workers, and about 3.3 of those had been employed for at least 3 years. As of the January 2026 snapshot, so again, it looked back those 2 years, 2/3 of those people were reemployed. So what you're seeing is technology is displacing folks, but a good chunk of those are actually coming back and getting reemployed. Now, this is the interesting number, Tommy. Among that group, basically, when they came back, they did get another full-time salary job. What they reported was about 49% of those were earning as much or more than before. So in the past, that was about 62%. So let me rephrase that. Only half of the people who lost their jobs mm-hmm. came back making about the same or more than they did previously. The other half ended up actually making less. So again, something else to consider, right? This is why I like to say build an exit ramp while you're still employed, mm-hmm. not after someone forces you to go on the street. And let me be clear, I don't want everyone to go out there and say, Jason told me I need to go look for another job. That is not it at all. What I would encourage everyone to do is just be aware, right? The job market's doing stuff that we've never seen before, Tommy. Technology is displacing things, and you should keep abreast of it. Otherwise, you'll get left behind.
Good information. Thank you. Appreciate it, Jason Shields, Chief Operating Officer for Gulf Coast Bank and Trust.
When you have a job, fair food might be one of the things you want to spend your hard-earned money on during Labor Day weekend. But the cost has some up in arms. Here's WCCO in Minneapolis.
Are prices higher? Well, depends on who you ask. Laura doesn't think so.
Actually, I don't think they're that much different. We always share whatever we get.
Kim, however, has noticed an increase.
I think that they've gone up a little. I mean, and they do determine what I get. So we love the Australian potatoes. They had a coupon for them. No brainer. A turkey leg for $20 and even with a coupon is $16.
And others like Kai and Tom just deal with it.
Start saving your money a little bit if you want to come in the fear, but it's honestly something you just have to expect in this how this economy is. And it's gone up a little bit. It just kind of makes sense. I mean, I remember the cookies being $2 a cup and now it went to $3. So it's kind of like, that's kind of upsetting, but it's like, what do you do? And it's kind of just like this day and age. I feel like it's just something that people should just expect, honestly.
How much did you spend on your turkey sandwich?
I think they were $15.
So how do you feel about that?
It is what it is. It's the fare.
No, I think it's right in line with what it has been in the past, I think. Other than the giant turkey leg for $20, that was my first surprise.
At the State Fair, Ari Bergeron.
Thank you for listening to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey. On Deadline is written and produced by me, Christy Strasser, and by Lauren Barry. Subscribe wherever you get podcasts.